for the Yajna Brahmana. Can I say Artha is a distraction for whom? Artha became a distraction from the spiritual path for somebody. Actually, yeah, it did not become a distraction. That became the main when she came to Vishnu. Hello, poor money thing. Is it? So cow became a distraction. That means somebody was virtuous, somebody was not exactly demoniac. Yajna Brahmana are not demoniac. See, in Kali Yuga, path, in our modern life, path is the main distraction for people from Krishna. But even punya can be a distraction from Krishna. So, that's why Krishna Bhagavatam, Mr. Prabhupada was asked by an American professor, if somebody were to tell you, somebody were to ask you, please tell us, what in essence is your most important teaching? If a small sample were to be given of your whole writings, what would you view as the most important essence of those writings? So Prabhupada gives us two verses in the first canto, Dharmasya Bhavaradasya Nathodhaya Bhagavati Nathastudaya Vivanthasya Kamolabhaya Hishita. And then, Kamasya Nainthya Pritya Labho Jive Pyavata Jivasya Prajijnata Nathodhishya Karanthi. So, in fact, many places dharma leads to artha, artha leads to kama, kama leads to moksha. Of course, most people get caught up in dharma, artha, kama only. Now, in modern society, there is no moksha and there is no dharma. There is only artha and kama. Because it is only money for the purpose of his great tradition. But without dharma, when there is artha and kama, that is not sustainable. So, we have to prosperity. But the prosperity is by exploiting Mother Earth and it will not last for long. But the whole system of dharma, artha, kama, moksha is called by Shri Bhagavatam as Kaitava Dharma, as cheating religion. There, in the morning we are discussing about spiritual who claim to be God. Now, they are obviously in the theoretical, the Shri Bhagavatam is so lofty. And even whatever is taught in the religion, it is said to be usually used to the ultimate goal. Not to speak of people who are not following the religious culture and coming up with some semi-dharma. So, calm and distracting people from the ultimate goal of life, an example. Sundareva, very good example. Yasi, very example. That the most classic example is Purava himself. Purava actually did a yajna for Vishnu. Hear all, actually he did the yajna and Lord Vishnu appeared in front of him. And he said, please give me. Who was that? Okay, Devyani. Please give me Urvashi. Now you wonder if somebody having Sakshat Darshan of the Supreme Lord, how can he be attracted to Urvashi? But that is the strength of the free will of the Devyani. Well, of course, what happened was because he had darshan of Supreme Lord, so eventually he got frustrated with Urvashi as he would never later be happy. But because of the darshan, he turned towards the Lord and became so pure. So, that dharma, artha, kama, all of these can become distractions. So, Vedavadarattaha Partham, Krishna is the Vedas. Let us talk about the mundane benefits of religion. And they are distraction in the spiritual path. And we talk about dharma, artha, kama. And moksha becomes the obstacle for some people. An example, the aspiration for moksha can distract one from bhakti. Sukadeva Goswami himself. Sukadeva Goswami himself. Sukadeva Goswami, he heard all of us, Lord Shiva was speaking, Bhagavatam Shukadeva Goswami as a parrot heard it. And then Shukadeva Goswami was speaking to Parvati, and then Parvati went to sleep as it was spoken, and Shuka was eager to hear. So he kept saying, kept on things wrong. And Lord Shiva was in trance, closing his eyes and speaking the glory of the Lord. And he was going on at the danger of speaking class in your sleep. We don't know whether audience is up, when you are closed. And suddenly Parvati in the day in the middle woke up. He said, you were telling this past thing, what happened? And Lord Shiva came out of his trance and said, And pastor, what are the laws? What are you doing? She became a little embarrassed. And then she said that, actually, then Lord Shiva understood. And Indra was prompting. And then Shukadeva was saying, I'm in trouble now. So, Lord Shiva saw that, and Lord Shiva got very angry. And he heard in his anger, in the loving anger, but he heard her objecting. And Shukadeva was having this rat flying, the bird flying, flying, flying. So, either say, Vyasadeva was teaching Vishnu's Bhagavatam to his wife. Who is his wife? Anyway, so I don't think it's Satyavati, but Aruni, I don't think it's anyway, so she allowed the one to sleep. And while hearing, it's common to go to sleep while hearing class. So we are in parampara. But here one is sleeping and mouth has fallen open. And Shukadeva was talking, let his eyes about directly to take shelter. And then Lord Yuvar talking, okay, that is one, let him went back. And then Shukadeva was not ready to come out of it. Now, although he heard Shrimad Bhagavatam, he did not become Bhagavan realized by hearing Bhagavatam of Shiva. He became Brahman realized. Of course, ultimately he is a parent of Radharani, but when he manages to see that in his life. That's why when finally Vyasadeva, well, how long are you going to stay in the womb? Please come out. When are you going to come out? So, he was not ready to come out. And finally, Vyasadeva had to get the Supreme Lord to give an assurance. My Maya will not trouble you. So, then he came out. But as soon as he came out, he started walking out. Because he was now Vyasadeva's supreme devotee, he is there with him. The top one story, but he just left it. Why? Because he didn't want to get entangled, he wanted to be liberated. He started going to jungle. But then the disciple of Vyasadeva was reading the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when he heard the enchanting pastimes of the Lord, then his heart became attracted. He asked him, where did you hear this? I heard it from your father, my father. Oh, then he went back again. And then he heard the full Srimad Bhagavatam. So of course, temporal is a distraction, should they find himself a great. That's why the first kind of thing, Atma Rama Shri Yoga. The Atma Ram, and he went out in jungle, but again he came back. So more specifically, moksha becomes a serious distraction for the Maya Aparita Jnana. And that's the last paragraph. What is happening? So one point here, they do not know, they do not know that the Vedic literature is a collection of extraordinary books that can be understood only through the chain of desired succession. So, evam parampara praptam imam rajeshi yoga. That means, you wonder why is it that they can be understood only through the chain of desired succession? What is there in the Vedic literature that you cannot understand otherwise? Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Vidya. The Bhagavad Gita is open for anyone to read. What is secret about it? Teaches us is not so much the intellectual techniques, but the devotional mood. Without the devotional mood, when studying scripture, we may come to know the external of the scripture without the heart, understanding the heart of the scripture. A simple example to illustrate this is that if there is a small baby who happens to fall sick, and now the mother knows the baby, and the baby is taken to a doctor. The doctor also knows the baby. The doctor will know more factual details about the baby. The baby's weight, blood pressure, heartbeat, and pulse rate, and then maybe even the composing of the urine in the stool. But does the doctor know the baby? Does the doctor know the child? The child is likely grown, not just a baby. The doctor's approach to the child is not to develop a relationship with him, but it is to just examine and analyze the physical body of the child.
So the doctor's knowledge is also valid. It may even be valuable. But that approach to the relationship will not lead to a personal one-to-one relationship between the child and the doctor. On the other hand, the mother, she may not know all these things. She may not know the pulse rate, she may not know the heartbeat, she may not know the, I don't know, the skin composition, the pigment composition of the skin or whatever. But first is approaching the heart, she develops love for the child. So, the non-devotee scholars, their approach has validity and even its utility. But their approach is not to develop a relationship. In fact, one of the characteristics, one of the defining requirements of academic study of religion is what they call a detached, dispassionate study. That means we should not get emotionally involved. We should not get emotionally affected by what we are doing. So, in fact, the whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole purpose of Krishna Lila is to get emotionally affected and emotionally transformed. And instead of having our love for mundane things, the purpose of hearing these literature is to help us develop our love for Krishna. So, because their purpose is different, so they may be able to far more precisely than us. The 10th canto Krishna is referred to by the name Krishna this many times. He is referred to by the name Yadav this many times. He is referred to by the name Govinda by this many times. And this particular grammar is used over here. And this sentence has this kind of grammar, the verbs have this kind of chanda, the chapters have this kind of composition. They may get a lot of technically accurate information, but they miss out on the essence, which is the love for Krishna. So, as I have actually explained, that it has to be understood in parasitic succession. Now, what do we get in the parasitic succession? Actually, if we study Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's work, or we study Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's work, we will find a substantial difference, not in the essential content of philosophy, but in the mode of presentation, the mode of emphasis, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada. You know, Bhaktivinoda, for example, standard example is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in Kali Yuga the only safe ashram is the Grahastha ashram. The only safe ashram is the Grahastha ashram. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, the only relationship that we need is the relationship with Krishna. We don't need any other relationship in this. And Srila Prabhupada says, yes, if you can be a brahmacharya, that is the best, but if not, then be a grahastha, practice Krishna consciousness. So now, if we look back at the social situations, at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Sahajiyas had given an enormous bad name to Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And most of the Sahajiyas are Babaji, renunciates. But renunciates who had actually given up all standards of renunciation and they were imitating Radha Krishna. Therefore, in that context is that the only safe ashram is the Grahastha ashram. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was preaching because of various factors, especially Swami Vivekananda's success in America and other factors. The renounced order had again gained a lot of respect. It was not only Swami Vivekananda, many other people also created a positive profile of the renounced order. And that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also gave sacrifice. You know, earlier the Babaji only had white dress. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur himself was sannyas and he also gave sannyas to others. And he said he utilized that respectability to others. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was Kedarnath Datta, and Swami Vivekananda, Narendranath Datta, they were distant cousins. But unfortunately, because of the negative stereotypes of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which were prevailing, the first one who became later Swami Vivekananda never came to know what was Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he in fact had to, when he went to America, he found that people were criticizing Krishna worship a lot. And in order to defend against Krishna worship, defend what he thought was the Hinduism or Vedic culture of Krishna worship from criticism, he countered that criticism by saying that Krishna worship is actually for lower level. Not just Krishna worship, all forms of worship are at the lower level. At the higher level, you have to go beyond all this and merge into Brahman. And in fact, actually, Krishna was severely criticized by anyone and all practitioners. So, because he criticized Gaudiya Vaishnava strongly, so our acharyas also countered the criticism back. But the point I'm making is that when Srila Prabhupada went to America, first he wanted to make renunciates who could become preachers. But then he realized that all the American boys and girls cannot do this. So then he arranged for marriages. And he encouraged married couples to teach. So you see that with respect to practice and practical application, every acharya will have a different emphasis. But the essential message remains the same. You know, the essential message is what Srimad Thakur is talking about. Navadhinavichu nahiko ar chauda bhuvanamashi. A part of the holy man, there is nothing else of substance. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also says that the experience of God in the holy name can give cannot be offered by anything else. The Prabhupada also says 99% of your advance comes by chanting. So the emphasis and the essential principles remain the same. But the application of those principles may vary according to time principles. But the point is, what is passed down in Parampara is not just the letters of people. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's language is quite different from Prabhupada's. What is passed down is the essential message of love, essential spirit of love. The Parampara is a chain of hearts. Chain of hearts means that the Guru is living a life where his heart is devoted to Krishna. And seeing that example enters into the heart of the disciple. The disciple becomes inspired to live according to the inspiration of the inspiration given by the Guru. And he devotes himself to Krishna. And in that way, he continues on. So what is passed down is not just the letters of the word, it is the essential spirit of loving service to Krishna. And that spirit of loving service to Krishna illumines everything. So Prabhupada did not have the much of the spiritual master, but he imbibes the spirit of loving service, and then he fulfills the spiritual master's instruction. So for me also, you know, when I observe it, now it's marvelous to see, in one sense, the nature of Radhanath Maharaj and the nature of Prabhupada are to a large extent quite different. You know, Radhanath Maharaj, he generally doesn't criticize too much. He's non-argumentative, non-polemical, non-confrontational, not compromising, but non-confrontational.
Prabhupada is political, you know, smashing, criticizing,
and giving straight, blunt answers many times.
So I always wonder, what was it that actually attracted Maharaj to Prabhupada?
That was a great mystery. I heard all the lectures that Maharaj was telling about what Prabhupada Japa Puja offerings, Prabhupada disciplines offerings. I never got the answer until I went journey home. In fact, Maharaj told me that, you know, his purpose, I was writing the second book of Maharaj. Maharaj said his purpose for writing journey home was to glorify Sri Prabhupada.
So I was wondering, how is that?
So Maharaj said that actually when I talked to Gauranga and Govindo, so Maharaj just mentioned that much, did not elaborate. They said that there are many people in the memories of Prabhupada. And they are all very sweet. But in general, most of the accounts of Srila Prabhupada's glory that we have are written in such a way that only insider devotees can appreciate it. Now, Transcendental Diary is a wonderful book, but you cannot give to new people. Maharaj said that I wanted to glorify Prabhupada in a way that not only he was within his con, but outside the observation. Now, as I said, inside his con, they accept that Prabhupada is the representative of the Yuga Avatar Kali Yuga, and especially empowered representative. But those who are outside cannot accept the exclusive glorification of Srila Prabhupada, although they will eventually. So what Maharaj is, he made Maharaj with so many spiritual leaders, and at the end he commits to Srila Prabhupada. So in that way, he is appreciating all, but he is committing himself to none of them. He is committing himself to only one particular. That way he is glorifying Srila Prabhupada. And this glorification in such a way that
people have come to this form that anybody and everybody can develop their essence speech.
And then when I read that book again, then I noticed that thing which attracted our Prabhupada's attracted Maharaj is he was very, initially he met him in the Cross Maidan and was impressed by the fact that Maharaj recognized, Maharaj was recognized among all the thousands of people and he got him to sit in front and he gave him the Krishna Guru. And then again when from Shantanu we heard that Prabhupada was preaching to the Beatles. But if you notice, Maharaj devoted one full chapter in the Jainism of the You know, the Gurudas produced with the prayer that Prabhupada. And Maharaj lies down on the bank of the Jamuna. And he's reading those for hours, he's thinking, what kind of person is this? He's old, he's alone, he's sick, he is forward, he's moneyless. And he's going to a distant country. What could any ordinary person pray for? Simply, my Lord, he's protecting me, he's helping me. But what is this person praying for? I will not please wait to receive this compassion. So, this mood of compassion and that, along with that, is deep humility. My dear Lord, I cannot do anything. Please make my words understandable to you. So, this mood of humility and compassion is what actually conquers Maharaj's heart and mind. And then later on, generally, if you hear Maharaj, speak about Prabhupada. This is what he focuses on. Prabhupada's humility, Prabhupada's courage, Prabhupada's compassion in going all over the world and preaching at an advanced stage and already so many difficulties. Maharaj doesn't speak so much about the polemical side of Sri Prabhupada. Polemically, argumentative and confronting and refuting. And then, I started wondering, as I was going to tell me one more thing, that Maharaj thinks that you know, ISKCON has painted a wrong picture of Sri Prabhupada. That means, what does that mean? That you know, generally you think of Prabhupada is full of passion and confronting and exposing all people to religion. That is true, Sri Prabhupada did that. But that was not the only thing that Sri Prabhupada did. So I did a search in Vedavya. And how many times did Prabhupada say fools or rascals? And how many times did Prabhupada use the word Krishna or Bhakti? Now fools and rascals comes a few thousand times. 4,000, 5,000 times, but Krishna and Bhakti come almost 50,000 times. So Prabhupada is primarily telling us about Krishna. And when something distracts us from Krishna, he is confronting. So, but what happens when we hear Prabhupada's pastime of smashing somebody and accusing somebody, we have a sensational feeling. And they stay in our mind. And they create a picture about Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is surely very brilliant in logic. And refuting people. But that is not the essence of Sri Prabhupada. The essence of Sri Prabhupada is love for Krishna, and that love for Krishna expressed as courageous compassion. So, you know, that way you see, many of Prabhupada's godbrothers could not understand what Prabhupada was doing when he went and preached. And Prabhupada, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had a particular kind of preaching. When Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur sent his disciples to America, to Europe, he told them, don't preach about Krishna at all. Because Krishna is a person who is bigger than Krishna. You preach about Lord Chaitanya. That's why Prabhupada Thakur and his disciple, Nishikant Sanyas, both of them together had written a book called Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And after the whole book was done, editing was done, they would discuss. Let us publish this book in your name, let us publish this book in mine. So the name was irrelevant for them. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur himself went through this book and edited the whole book. But he thought, you know, if you are a professor with a PhD, if the book is in your name, in Europe it will be appreciated more. So this book was like the main preaching tool. So they did not focus, they did not present themselves as Hindus, they did not even present themselves primarily as Krishna or Vishnu. They presented themselves as followers of Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya is a Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a messenger of universal love. So they used a different strategy and Prabhupada's godbrothers did not go with public announcements. They tried to go and meet the scholars and preach. Prabhupada said he adopted a different strategy. Just went to the hippies and the Buddha just started chanting and dancing. So the Prabhupada's strategy. So the point chanting is the disciples of session. We say that you should repeat what the session master said, but that repetition is
not just like a rock machine. Like repetition is the realization. And the realization is like that a devotee understands what is the situation around me right now and how can I get solution.
That's why when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he did not talk much about Gaudiya at all. He did not talk much. He talked much about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but he never talked much about his spiritual master
directly.
Occasionally, he would talk a little bit about spiritual master, a few pastimes here and there. But Prabhupada focused on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because the devotee would come back to India and they would come to know about how the Gaudiya had split and everything. That would have disturbed them. He didn't talk much about that. So the point is that the disciple succession, what is passed down is the spirit of loving and serving Krishna. And one time when Prabhupada had come back to India and some of his godbrothers criticized him, saying that, why has he taken the title Prabhupada? Actually what had happened was, when Prabhupada came to Mayapur, so the devotees had to come where that road turns towards Mayapur, at big U-turn sort of there. So at that point, at just outside of Mayapur, the devotees had made a big sort of placard, "Welcome Srila Prabhupada to Mayapur." As soon as Prabhupada saw that, he said, "My godbrothers are not going to be pleased by this. My godbrothers are not going to be pleased by this." And exactly that's what happened. So Harishavari Prabhu was there, and three of his godbrothers came. And they were quite angry. And Prabhupada told Harishavari Prabhu, "You go away." Harishavari Prabhu went away, and Prabhupada showed his godbrothers his own letterhead. And on the letterhead, it was simply said, "Trivandi Goswami, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." So Prabhupada told them that, "I did not take the title of Prabhupada. You know, because my disciples were given me, and wherever I write myself, I never use the word Prabhupada for myself. So I simply use A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." So then his godbrothers got sacrificed. Because some of them felt that Prabhupada was usurping the position of the spiritual master by using the same title. But then Prabhupada told Tamalakrishna Maharaj, that, you know, those who criticize me, you can go and ask them. You know, who has initiated more disciples than me? Who has opened more temples than me? Who has written more books than me? Generally, Prabhupada would consider these three things as tangible signs of success in our movement. Writing of books, opening of temples, and making of devotees. These three tangible. How do we know that our movement is succeeding? Yes, you can say people are becoming developing goodwill, we have done so many festivals, that's nice. But tangibly, publishing and distributing books, making devotees and opening temples. The tangible kind of something. And the Maharishi was very revolutionary. And Prabhupada said, "I have inherited the legacy of my spiritual master. I have inherited the legacy of my spiritual master." What is the legacy of the spiritual master? Actually, Bhaktivedanta Thakur and the body of God had so much property, Prabhupada did not get any of it. There was so much fighting which went on. The legacy of the spiritual master is not the property that is there in any of his organization. The legacy of the spiritual master is that desire to be Krishna, that desire to glorify Krishna. That if by our association with the spiritual master, he gets back. That is the greatest gift. But towards the end of his life, Mr. Prabhupada was asked, "Who will be your successor?" Prabhupada said, "Whoever wants to be." Whoever wants to be. Prabhupada said, "That means that I have given you instruction. Those who live according to my instruction, they will be my successor." So he made up for the GDP as a legal inheritor of his conscious property and everything. But the point is, the legacy of the spiritual master, that popular on the disciple's profession, is the desire to serve the Guru of Krishna. And that desire is the basis of purification and transformation, individually and throughout the world. So, without coming in contact with the disciple of Krishna, without having the desire to serve and glorify Krishna, one cannot understand the desire of Krishna. So, Prabhupada passed on the desire to his disciples, and they are now passing the desire on to us. This is the case with the spiritual master who spoke. Desire to serve Krishna, desire to glorify Krishna. And if you get that, then, you know, I recently did an interview of Mr. Karma Prabhu, back to God. Now we have started a new column, back to God, called the Hare Krishna people. So different different eminent personalities in ISKCON who have achieved success in philosophy, psychology, and materially also. We take their interviews. So Suntakamapu told me that actually I consider Prabhupada's books that filled with instructions like a jewel mine. So I just took one instruction from that jewel. I took one jewel. There is no scientific teaching. And Prabhupada enriched my life by that. And then I have been teaching all over the world, doing so many things. So instruction to the master is the Prabhupada writes in the second chapter of Abhinga, first chapter only, I think that in the absence of the spiritual master, the instructions are the treasure of the disciple. Then the treasure of the disciple. He treasures it and then he applies it and he gets so much spiritual benefit. And the world gets spiritual benefit by that. This is extremely important to understand how the Vedic literature has to be understood. Without approaching the desires of your master and serving him, fulfilling his desires, one may get a lot of material information which will be useful in its own way. But it will not transform our heart, it will not help us develop love for Krishna, nor will it help others to develop love for Krishna. Now let's go to the last category, Maya Prakriya.
Maya Prakriya.
About Vedic literature. They too faint. Just to give you an idea,
is it visible or not?
Okay. It's very faint also. It's basically extract from a book. See how it is. I explained earlier the radar have it. Can you expand it a little bit? It takes it backward a little bit. Sorry?
Okay, so basically, so the Veda that's good enough. We need some of it in some ahead, but it's very small, you cannot do much. Resolution will go down. Can I have the other mic? Other mic is there?
Other
mic. So here, Hare Krishna. So here we have the four Vedas. Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, Atharva Veda. And now the Vedas themselves have four categories of literatures within them. The Samhitas, the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. So, now this is not an exhaustive review over here, but it is indicative over here. So now for example, where do you see Isha Upanishad here? Isha Upanishad. So it is a part of the Shukla Yajur Veda. So basically, the Yajur Veda has two parts. The Krishna and the Shukla, the right and the left hand. And in that, in the part of the Vajrasneha Samhita, the 40th chapter, is called as the Isha Upanishad. So the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is just before this. So basically that means, the Veda, Rig Veda, essentially has the Samhita. So Rig Veda Samhita mentions the Lord of Shintara, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, and has some references to Vishnu and Krishna also. Along with that, the same Rig Veda has other parts. Brahmana, Aranyaka and Upanishads. So now this, the Rig Veda contains glorification, verses of praises. The Brahmana contains some directions on how to perform rituals. And the Aranyaka and the Upanishads, they are the contemplative, the philosophical part of the literature. Generally, the Vedas themselves don't contain much philosophy. Just talk about, they are more about what we could call as technology. Now this is what you can get, this is what you have to do with it. So if you worship Indra, you get this. If you worship Varuna, you get this. Some of the religions are this worldly, some of the religions are otherworldly. But otherworldly is not spiritual, it is heavenly. And in the Upanishads, the spiritual or philosophical contemplation starts. The philosophical contemplation starts. There is actually a description of or the analysis. What is happening going to happen? Or what we are going to achieve at this? Going to happen. Their observation can be called on. And again, carry out what they don't know. So, basically, the Upanishads lead us towards eternity. The Vedas, they don't take us to eternity first. They take us to higher material enjoyment. So, next is the Mandukya, Krishna. So, these Upanishads are there. They are the principal Upanishads. So, how many Upanishads are there given over here? 3, 6,
9,
13 Upanishads are given over here. So, generally 12, 13, 10. They are considered the principal Upanishads. And you will see Prabhupada quote generally from the Chandogya Upanishad, occasionally from the Kena Upanishad, frequently from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Tattva Upanishad, Svetashikara Upanishad, Mandala Upanishad. Actually, there are these verses. The two words analogy comes in the Svetashikara Upanishad, the Tattva Upanishad. So, the Mandukya Upanishad is the favorite of the Mayavadis. So, Shankaracharya's guru, Gaudapada. Gaudapada wrote a famous commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad called Karika. And that is considered the original book of Mayavadi. But it is not actually fully impersonal. There are also traces of personality over there also. Now, the idea and criteria that the favorite books of Madhvacharya. But Madhvacharya was departed in the commentary of the Upanishad. Speaking of that, at that time he departed from the world.
and then these are the omissions which every acharya, minister of Vedanta, has to comment on. Srinivasan Pillai earlier the omissions commented on many of these omissions. It's very interesting how they contain or they direct us to the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Okay. So now, we have marker.
So if you want to understand the progression of the Vedic literature, this negative side is the material life.
Takes us upward towards positive material activity, or rather not positive material activity, towards religious material activity, or as we say religious sense gratification. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the word for karma kanda as higher materials. And now after that there is a jnana kanda section, which is around the zero. It's primarily the Upanishads, even the Aranyaka slightly. So, what they do with the Upanishads? They start with the material and then negate the material. All these material forms are temporary, all the material achievements are illusory. They go beyond it. And they strongly emphasize the material things have to be given up. And they give hints of spiritual. Hints of other positive form, positive spiritual form, positive spiritual activity. But even they don't describe these much in detail. And then beyond the positive side, there are the Puranas, especially the Bhagavata, which describe deep. Now, the Puranas in general, all other Puranas, take over this whole genre. But the Bhagavata is another Purana. He talks about Karmakanda, but he shows how Karmakanda is worthless. You know, there are so many stories, there is Purvajan story, there is like Pachiri Bhajan story, Taksha Prajapati story, Yagi Brahman story. Which isn't given to Karmakanda, but it's all useless. You do Jnana Kanda, Shravakuni was a yogi, it still he fell down. So they saw how all that is useless. Kumara said, after the Brahman realized, but then they don't find it. So Shri Bhagavatam has in this way, this is the ultimate conclusion. And you see, the Vedas have a progressive plan. The progressive plan, do you remember earlier, you see what? Veda Ekavakyata. Ekavakyata means all of them have one message. But if you don't understand this progression, then you will see that actually these Puranas are a different genre of literature, and the Vedic Samhitas are a different genre of literature. But they are not different, they are progressive. And each of them serve a particular purpose in the onward progressive spiritual realization. So now if somebody has fixed this part, of this part, and that is the essence, then they become the person who is Vidyayam Rataha. It's become distracted from the ultimate purpose by intermediate purpose. So, this is Vedavadrataha and this is Maya Padatta Jnana. And so they become distracted. But if they are fortunate, they will move forward towards the ultimate destination. Any questions on this? Yes.
I have not met. I have met this.
Now, I will answer this with some references tomorrow, but I will give the principle now. The question is that, you know, we say that the goal of all the Vedas is Krishna, but is Krishna there in the Vedic Samhitas or is there in the Puranas?
Well, there are several references
to Vishnu and a few Krishna.
So
there are a few references to Krishna and a few references to Vishnu, and there are many more references to Indra in the Vedas. Now there is a reason for this. The Vedic Samhitas. So when we enjoy practicing the Vedas, we refer to the Vedic Samhitas. So the Vedic Samhitas have a particular purpose. That is, to get people who are materialists to become religious materialists. Do you want sense gratification? So you can imagine one circle of sense gratification, another circle of religion. So the intersection of these two circles is karma. Where people who are in.
Do you have another chart?
Yes.
Let me put it up and
I'll explain.
And the circle of religion.
So where the two intersect, that is karma kama. That means religion has many purposes apart from gratification. But materialistic people will become interested in religion only when it provides them gratification. So karma kama is that zone. But when people come to karma kama, they start realizing that religion works. And as they develop faith in the both in religion and those who teach religion, then when the disciples are telling them that actually this is good, it's benefiting you at a material level.